This is Mae Bressel. It is side two of broadcast number 815, and I want to get into the matter of Kuwait. Remember the testimony of Albert Hakim, how he met with Mr. Gorbanifar, and they had a session one-on-one where Mr. Secord and a representative of the CIA and other Americans were out of the room, and they discussed the possibility that in exchange for releasing American hostages, 17 convicted terrorists would be released from a prison in Kuwait. And this sounded pretty shocking, and people at home were very angry about it, not the masses of people listening to the hearings, but members of the Iran-Contra panel. And then when Admiral Poindexter went to testify this past week, he said, yes, indeed, he agreed that these 17 convicted terrorists could be part of the deal would be to release them from Kuwait. And Oliver North confirmed that that nine-point program of Hakim's was not his program, that the Admiral, the National Security Advisor, Lieutenant Colonel North under Poindexter, and Hakim, hired by North, had agreed on a nine-point program to release these people from Kuwait. The Wall Street Journal has a story this morning, July the 20th. Shultz tells the investigators of Reagan's fury on hearing a plan to free Iran terrorists. Secretary of State George Shultz has told congressional investigators that President Reagan was infuriated when he was informed of a White House-backed offer to help formulate a plan to assist Iran to free 17 convicted terrorists imprisoned in Kuwait. Shultz's account conflicts with Poindexter, Mr. Reagan personally endorsed this offer as part of a nine-point program in which Rear Admiral Poindexter had briefed him. Mr. Shultz, who learned of the proposal only after the Admiral left the White House, said the President was shocked to hear of this. These two accounts raise questions about how much detail was provided to the President when he was briefed by Poindexter last fall, and they add to concern in Congress about sensitive policy options presented to Mr. Reagan by a small national security staff anxious to continue their secret contacts in Iran. The 17-backed Shiite terrorists were convicted in connection with a series of bombings in 1983, December 83, that targeted the United States and French embassies in Kuwait. They killed at least seven people. The nine-point program endorsed by the White House was put forward by Albert Hakim when he met in Europe, and with the understanding that Mr. Hakim and his partners and retired Air Force Major General Secord were developing a plan and assumed to free the prisoners. And Poindexter said, yes, I approved of it, and the President, and too, the President said he didn't know. Now, in their testimony, Albert Hakim had said that if they opened up relationships with Iran, he would stand to make many, many millions of dollars, that he worked there before and made many, many millions, and there would be a tremendous profit if they opened up getting rid of Khomeini and business as usual in Iran. Robert Owen testified that he was assured that if they overthrew Mr. Ortega in Nicaragua, there were tremendous profits to be made again, just as the Somoza family had. That was a good business, and that there was the large opportunity in Iran, and again, in Nicaragua. And Mr. Secord also mentioned a huge profit, a business with himself, Hakim's partner, if they had effected a coup and put their old Iranians back in power, they'd be back into this tremendous arms business, because Iran bought more arms from the United States than any other single country. Now, the Washington Post had an article this past week that really shocked me, and I'm going to do the remaining part of the program with you on this article. There aren't many things that shocked me. Believe me, I've read the news for so long that when many stories come out, I just take them for granted that business as usual. But this one was this past week in the Washington Post, and it opened up a lot about Kuwait that I have not studied yet. When something comes in the news that's important, I try to understand it and get out books and articles on it. And the most I did on Kuwait was at the time that Sadat was murdered. I believed that Edwin Wilson and Theodore Shackley and Thomas Kleins and Eric von Marburg, the group involved with the Iran-Contra, with Frank Carlucci's friend Ren Marburg, were involved in that company, Itzco, over in Switzerland to make huge amount of money of the arms sales as a result of the Camp David agreement of Jimmy Carter with Sadat. But just a few days after Sadat was murdered, the stock in Santa Fe, a company in California, went up tremendously, and on the board of the Santa Fe company was Gerald Ford. His best friend out here at Pebble Beach is in a jail, federal prison at the time, for making a large profit with advanced knowledge of the sale going up of involving a Kuwait oil company and a Santa Fe International out in California. Jerry Ford made a profit. He's not in jail, but his friend Darius Keaton made a profit on foreknowledge, and I felt that when Sadat was murdered, it would affect the politics, and I studied that much about Kuwait, that it would cause these people to buy early and low just before Sadat was murdered and make this hunk of money, which they did, and one went to jail for. Now, this article from Washington Post is titled, "Vast Wealth of Kuwait Incorporated Lies Behind the Reflagging of These Ships." This article came out 2 weeks ago, and I haven't seen it in any of the other newspapers reprinted, and nobody's mentioned it on the talk shows. If any of you have seen it, send me copies of what you've seen if it didn't come out of the original Washington Post. Gulf Tankers, a Part of Global Holdings. This is by Jonathan Randall and Patrick E. Tyler. Within 2 weeks, U.S. warships are scheduled to begin escorting a fleet of 11 tankers. The Reagan administration has portrayed the escort mission as necessary to protect these ships from the fallout of the Iran-Iraq war. But by escorting these tankers, the United States will be also protecting part of what has come to be known as Kuwait Incorporated, an expanding overseas empire built around oil with a Western investment portfolio worth $100 billion. These are the people we're spending the money to protect. They don't put money into their own Air Force to protect their ships. We're going to protect them. They own property in England, Great Britain, Germany, the United States that is equal $100 billion. And just add up what our debt is, making war and protecting these people. The article says they have massive real estate holdings and wholly integrated petroleum industry that is challenging the power of the multinational oil giants. The controversial escort task, only 9 weeks after 37 American sailors were perished on the USS Stark, was put together and has provoked criticism from those who fear that more American lives may be put at risk, and we were warned this week they would be. They'll be performing perilous duties in a treacherous war zone. According to Lloyd's of London, at least 325 vessels have been attacked or damaged by Iran-Iraq since 1980. As the United States raises its profile in the war, the concurrent role to be played by the Soviet Union, which has leased three tankers to Kuwait, has heightened the anxiety that Washington, Moscow may have cleverly been maneuvered by the Gulf sheikdom into competing to protect Kuwaiti interests. Kuwait International was founded by merchant clans that traded in pearls and imports since the days of Sinbad. It is unique among the Arab states that meet the western and southern shores of the Persian Gulf. More than any other Middle East producer, Kuwait thinks and acts as a corporation, and this is probably the work or help of the minds of, like, Peter Drucker. They are a corporation as much as a sovereign state. We're not like the Saudis. We don't mix politics with business. Oil, which accounts for the greatest share of their revenue, is the primary source. But foreign investments is their business, and they're becoming increasingly important as the corporate state supervises and is run by the Sabah family, S-A-B-A-H. Until a few weeks ago, the 11 newly registered American tankers represented half of the fleet of Kuwait Oil Tanker Company. Until just a few weeks ago, it was half of their fleet. They had 11, they now have 22. It is a state-owned subsidiary, Kuwait Oil Tanker Company. It is a subsidiary of Kuwait Petroleum Corporation. The tanker company's chairman, Chief Ali Khalafi, is the government's minister of oil and member of the governing Sabah clan. They have ruled and been major merchant families since the 18th century. The family sits as board of directors with one brother as chairman, another as crown prince, another foreign minister, on down the line. From the time of the skyrocketing oil prices, Kuwait opted their oil fortune to put in the West rather than build 20th century monuments to its accidental wealth. Some of their neighbors, notably Saudi Arabia, plowed billions into airports, palaces, universities, weapon systems, unprofitable domestic industries. Kuwait invested in American and European real estate, corporate stocks, and established heavy industry in West Germany. During the decade, Kuwait set up two investment funds of $40 billion each. One of them is called Funds for Future Generations, and you believe it will be. Just to go back, they didn't put their money into weapon systems. They say to the United States government that is bankrupt, that has this tremendous debt, if you don't want communism, you protect us, and in the meantime, we'll buy America, which is what they've been doing, and the statistics here are shocking. So just remember, when they talk about the price of the commission, or not the commission, but the Iran-Contra hearings to investigate matters, that Mr. Hakim and Secord and Poindexter had a profit motive, probably very strong, in getting released those people in prison in Kuwait and getting their finger into Kuwait politics that must be much, much deeper than we know. But Kuwait says, we don't waste money buying weapons. We'll let America protect us. They make fun of Saudi Arabia. So they have two $40 billion funds. That's $80 billion total. One is the Fund for Future Generations. It gets 10% of the state revenue each year, and the government is forbidden from touching either the principal or the interest until the year 2001. This fund and the comparable general government reserve are the financial motors that have given Kuwait a major stake in the West. In a recent analysis, an American economist observed, besides exporting oil, Kuwait is a major exporter of capital. They're putting this money away and they're not going to touch it to 201. Kuwait's investments in the West involve $80 billion in government holdings, another $20 billion invested in super rich upper crust for the upper crust of Kuwaiti society. While oil reserves, with oil reserves second only to Saudi Arabia, the Soviet Union, and perhaps Iraq, Kuwait has plowed all of its money from its own oil industry and for a maximum income for years to come. The Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries says that nearly 1 million barrels a day is pumped from Kuwait. 1 million barrels a day. This insulates the country from sudden market shocks. And, of course, they have the cash to buy a property that is cheap, you understand? The crisis in the Gulf, brought on by the escalating tanker war, comes at a time when Kuwait has embarked on a bold expansion downstream to seize new oil markets and compete directly with international oil giants such as Exxon, Mobil, and Shell. Over the years, Kuwait made a series of corporate purchases to endow its oil industry with exploration. Among the large and most controversial of those purchases was the $2.5 billion acquisition of Santa Fe International, the United States exploration giant. In May, officers of the Santa Fe created the Chesapeake Shipping Company in Delaware for the sole purpose of assuming title to the 11 tankers used in reflanking operation. Now, it was that Santa Fe company that was so controversial that was bought up by Kuwait Oil, and as I say, Gerald Ford and his friend Darius Keaton were sort of instigators in the combining of the two companies and were on the board of the Santa Fe. This article says the tankers were chartered back. We got 11 tankers, Kuwait tankers, that were put in Delaware that were chartered, and they are chartered back then to the Kuwait Oil Tanker Company, a wholly owned subsidiary of Kuwait Petroleum, of which the United States has nothing to do with, gets no profits from, and goes back. The favors we fly our flags for them, have the ships to protect them, the airplanes to protect them. But all of this goes back to the Kuwait people with hundreds of billions of dollars of cash, similar to the amount of cash Japan is accumulating. The article says the Kuwait Oil Tanker Company was established in 1959, 49% owned by the Kuwaiti government, 51% by private Kuwaiti investors. In 1979, following 2 years of heavy loss, they announced that they were going to buy up all privately owned stock when the prices went down, and so that they could totally own it. Part of this plan was to assume greater control over the shipment of Kuwait crude and refined oil products. They upgraded their tanker fleet. Four new liquefied gas carriers came from a French shipmaker. They were purchased in 1979. Four 80,000-ton tankers from a Japanese firm at a cost of $25 million each. France made a tanker. Japan made a tanker. The United States didn't get any business from that. The following year, two large crude carriers were ordered from another company in Japan. I can't pronounce it. The Harimi Heavy Industries for a price of $156 million. The 10 vessels with a steam tanker built for Kuwait by Mitsubishi Heavy Industries in 1977 compromised the reflagged fleet that will carry the United States naval protection. Kuwait's strongest market is the Far East, where they sell crude oil, and their refineries are in Singapore and Tokyo, and there is a growing captive distribution system in Europe that makes Kuwait unique for its emergence along with competition to the multinational giants. Kuwait's oil arm has not made up its purchases all at once. It picked up the Gulf Oils Corporation, their stations in Northern Europe, in 1983 after the Gulf was purchased by Standard Oil of Chevron. Last March, the state oil purchased British Petroleum Station and the distribution network in Denmark. Outside the oil industry, the Kuwaitis hold substantial real estate values on several continents. The country's investment authorities have the second-largest stake in Great Britain's real estate market, according to one source in Washington. Kuwait purchased choice properties in our own country, including the Columbia Plaza development opposite the State Department. In a major resort development project, Kuwait developed the Kuwait Island off South Carolina coast. They own half the island. They'll sell half off from their profits, and in West Germany, Kuwait owns 15% of Daimler, the Mercedes-Benz, a share of the Volkswagen, the giant Hoshas chemical firm. More than half of Kuwait's vast investment portfolio is tied up in American corporations, with holdings in virtually every company on Fortune's list of the 500 largest industrial corporations. Don't think that Mr. Secord and Hakim, that came out of the Otto von Bolschwing network in California, that was set up for him, the head of Hitler's the Romanian Iron Guard that moved to California and set up International Imaging, his subsidiary. Hakim and Secord tapped into that. It was the United States worldwide Galen operation. Don't think they didn't know what they were doing when these guys came back from Iran and bought that piece of an office space with just some filing cabinets that opened up a network to continue the Reinhard Galen, Adolf Hitler objectives after and during World War II. These people are buying, as I say, into every single one of the Fortune 500 industrial corporations. Kuwait Incorporated has been discreet, however, in buying into the West, especially the United States, where a wave of anti-Arab, anti-OPEC sentiment swept through Congress at one time following the oil shocks in the 1970s. There's still fear that a new wave of resentment could flare. That's why we haven't read much about these activities, or else I've been ignorant up to this point. I plead ignorance, but I'll be more aware of Kuwait, and I certainly was at the time Sadat was murdered and the Santa Fe Company in California was purchased. This Washington Post said, to avoid disclosure requirements such as that of the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission on their holdings of 5% or more, Kuwait had generally spread its equity investment in the United States among many companies. That's why they bought into the 500 and buy property across the street from the State Department. Since the Iran-Iraq War began in 1980, Kuwait, which has no natural defenses or even sufficient natural drinking water, has been anything but neutral. Historically caught between its large and powerful neighbors, it has lived and it has also favored Iraq. Kuwait became a stalwart supporter of President Saddam Hussein's government in Baghdad and still contributes a large portion of its crude oil production to finance Iraq's war effort. Remember the war that's in the Persian Gulf. The United States and its allies encouraged Iraq to make war against Iran, to break the Khomeini government, to break them down, to bankrupt them. We were the ones that goaded them into this war, and we were going to be neutral. But we instigated and promoted persons that we were close with to tell Iraq to defeat Khomeini, put Iran back in the hands of the Savak and the Pahlavi family. It didn't work. So now we're going to help Iraq instigate a confrontation with Iran to do what Iraq couldn't conceivably do alone. And we couldn't get the hostages out in time for the election, so nothing else matters. It wasn't a matter of getting the hostages a week after the election. They were of no use to Ronald Reagan when the election was over. But the geostrategic part of the Iranian effort is very important, and the side effects of those persons helping assist this project are the profits that come from the narcotics traffic from Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran that flowed through there until Khomeini came in and until the Soviet Union took Afghanistan and cut into a tremendous hunk of the profits of drugs that our banks need to keep them from toppling. Just to finish this Washington Post article, a part of that, it said if the Soviet had offered to flag these ships for Kuwait, it would have presented a problem or a conflict, but Kuwait dangled this in front of America. All they have to say is the Soviets offered us help. If the Soviet war material for Iraq, their tanks, artillery, and ammunition, and crated aircraft, pass through part of the Shuaiba, it is allowed that Soviet material will pass through. It has tolerated overflies of Iraqi war paths on their way to bomb Iranian targets. Its news media have openly favored Baghdad, and there was the Kuwaiti alarm when the Iranian troops established a foothold in Iraq's southern border. Kuwaitis argue that they have little choice but to help Iraq, even though the Soviet Union had been helping them, although it was never a tranquil neighbor. In 1961, Kuwait's new independence was challenged by Baghdad. And then this article goes on to December 83, where the Iranian-inspired Shiites from Lebanon and Iraq sabotaged Kuwaiti oil installations, and the French-American embassy compounds were bombed. Kuwait came under pressure in the spring of 84 when Iraqi airplanes inaugurated attacks on shipping carrying Iranian oil exports in the hope of crippling Iranian financial capability. For the first time, the perpetuators of these conflicts in Iraq, this article goes on, are now up to their you-know-what in trying to explain the American position and their position towards Iran and Iraq, except that the article goes into the confusions that the Kuwaitis have asked the Americans to protect their ships. And now we see that the Americans may have been blackmailed into making this stance at this time because we don't know what agreements Ronald Reagan made. We know at the time of the hearings on Taiwan and the fabrics coming in that Reagan vetoed a bill that was before Congress by Congressman Jenkins, the tariffs on imported cottons and fabrics from Taiwan or industry in Taiwan. And if it were not for the Iran-Contra hearings or the diversionary note or whatever, the memo that was found or the paper in Lebanon that exposed this team or Hasanfa's landing in Nicaragua, we wouldn't have known about those deals. So we don't know how much Kuwait owns this country and owns the politicians in this country that we are taking the position now that we're going to protect their ships. Casper Weinberger, the article continues, defends the position that he will protect Kuwait shipping. The Reagan administration will protect the shipping. American credibility among moderate Arab regimes has been eroding for other reasons than the Iran-Contra affair, also because they have this strategic alliance with Israel, the withdrawal of the Marines from Beirut, warns Washington's apparent unwillingness to follow through the assurances made by Jimmy Carter protecting the flow of oil from the Gulf. And so the article summarizes that originally Congress didn't have opposition to flagging the ships. Then when they found out the mixed-up policy of the President of the United States and the National Security Council and the Iran-Contra affair came out, they realized that we're getting closer to a war, and also this material brought out how they wanted to kill Khomeini, cause chaos in Iran, and putting the moderates in also meant shipping weapons surreptitiously and funding and approving of the overthrow of Khomeini, and this would bring other confrontations to the area, and all of a sudden Congress is waking up that something crazy is going on. Also in this article from the Washington Post, it was July 5th, incidentally, they have a picture of the ships reflagging the Kuwaiti tankers. This is what they will sound like. The Al-Rakaw is called the Bridgeton. Al-Funtas will be Middleton. Kozima is Townsend. Yum al-Maradame is Sea Isle City. Yum al-Alish will be Surf City. Matraba will be Chesapeake City. Kasbah will be Ocean City. Kas al-Burgain is Gas King. Gas al-Mangish is Gas Prince. Gas al-Hamadi is Gas Princess. Gas al-Kuwait is Gas Queen. The King, Queen, Princess, and the others named after cities on the Atlantic coast. I don't pronounce those properly, but you get an idea of what I'm saying, that they have hundreds of billions. We're a country that is a debtor nation, the largest debtor nation. We're exceeding Brazil and Argentina. We're dirt poor. And they have their ships built in France and in Japan, and the profits come from Japan, and their money goes into Germany, and then they put it into 500 corporations, all 500 of the major ones, second only in Great Britain in the real estate, London owning real estate, Germany, Great Britain, United States, and their profits are increasing in value. And, of course, this has an effect on politicians, and this isn't brought out by why we're messing around with people in the Kuwait jail that bombed the American embassy and so forth. One other part of that article from the Washington Post is called Delaware Firm is the New Home of the Kuwait Ships, just to show how far we're going. The growing U.S. profile in the Persian Gulf. And I bring this up at great length because these are long articles, but Jack Anderson pretty well had the script in 1984, and I've kept it. I have pretty good files. I can't always find what I want, and sometimes I can find them, and I was able to locate the plans for the Persian Gulf, which seemed to be the script of the Reagan administration. This article from the Washington Post said, it is derided by critics as a sham company, hastily put together, formed in Delaware Corporation. It has no office, no employees, not even a phone number. The official mailing address is downtown Dover. Nevertheless, the Chesapeake Shipping Company, sounds okay, it's Chesapeake, good American shipping company with American names, was created just 6 weeks ago by the representatives of the Kuwait government and has suddenly turned into a key instrument of the United States foreign policy. As a lawfully incorporated U.S. company, the Chesapeake Shipping Company is the prime vehicle for implementing Reagan's controversial plan to put 11 Kuwait oil tankers with the United States flag and give them naval escort to their journeys to the Persian Gulf. When the reflagging plan surfaced in the spring, many in the maritime community assumed it faced stiff hurdles, if only on regulatory or procedural grounds. How, they asked, can you convert a Kuwait oil tanker built in Japan and also France, manned by Arabs and Filipinos, into a United States vessel that will fly the stars and stripes, including, as I mentioned on a broadcast a week or two ago, the flag that came from the Capitol building in Washington, D.C.? The article says, as the creation of the Chesapeake Company shows, the Kuwaitis are working closely with the top administration officials. They formed a U.S. company, and they will take title to their ships, and there will be special waivers from the federal ship safety and operating standards, thereby qualifying the foreign-built tankers to fly the United States flag. The expeditious way in which the Kuwaitis reflagged their fleet has aroused sharp criticism among the U.S. maritime industry, which complained that the American ownership and crew manning laws have been flouted in this process. I've never seen anything like this in 30 years of practicing maritime law, said Alan Mendelson, a Washington maritime lawyer and critic of the plan. They compare the United States to being a two-bit nation and running flagships like Panama and Liberia. Six of the 12 directors of the Chesapeake, and listen to this Chesapeake company that's going to flag it, six of the 12 listed directors of the Chesapeake offices, his dummy front, are officers from the Santa Fe Company, which I cited on the air 1983, we're going back 4 years ago, based in Alhambra, California. The rest are based in Sufate, Kuwait, and three of them officers of the Kuwait Oil Tanker, the sole shareholder of the Chesapeake. So there are 12 directors of this Kuwait Oil Company, this dummy front, the Chesapeake. Six come from Santa Fe, the corporation that is linked to Gerald Ford and his friend Darius Keaton in Pebble Beach. Six in Kuwait. That deal, combining the Santa Fe with the Kuwait oil, was so smelly 4 years ago, and there was foreknowledge of stock manipulation by people knowing in advance that these two were going to merge, and six officers of this organization, this Chesapeake Shipping Company, come right out of the Santa Fe connected to Gerald Ford. My time is up, and I don't have time to completely finish this article. It's a very important one on taking these ships and flagging them with American flags. All of the profit goes to those people, except maybe the six board members and the Fortune 500 investments of Kuwait. If Kuwait gets more money, then more money buys to buy more corporations in America. This is a very, very dangerous situation brought on by people ignoring Ronald Reagan in California, almost cynically saying they deserve what they get. People deserve what they get. We had warnings about this, man. I shouldn't be so bitter. I'll just conclude and say, this is Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week to talk some more about the Iran-Contra team and what they're doing to this country.